is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower, and we have another great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality, science, and the like, and anything else that might come to mind. And I thought tonight would be an interesting show about the structure of mental thought. And it's a kind of, you know, you could say, well, what's that about? Well, of course, I'll define it in a minute and explain more. But it really is about, it's about how thought is really the pervasive issue throughout the universe, more than just like talking about parts and pieces and structure. But structure is important because that is part of what it means to be mental. So it has to be in there as a kind of explanation. Also, I'm going to talk about thought in general and how thought differs from different worlds than mental. But I want you to understand that human beings primarily think mentally. So we're really talking about human thought here too. So don't get confused by these fancy words or anything like that. If you want to call in, you can. And the phone number, hey, it's right on the screen there. And, of course, I'm always open to hearing some anything people want to tell me about. If they have a disagreement or if they just are confused, that's all right. You can explain, call up, or say whatever you want. Okay, so let's begin with this idea that to understand what I mean by thought, I'm really talking about the part of what makes some part of life connected, potentially connected, to God and to other parts of God, which includes all of life. So thought is the thing that really is like the glue that connects everything together and at the same time is a creative element. So it has two parts to it. We'll call it the connective part, which I refer to as consciousness, and it has a creative part, which I refer to as creation or purpose, will sometimes, or choice, freedom. All those are elements that are part of thought. And without both of those together, you don't end up having thought. You can have some part of thought, but you don't have a completed thought. And not everything is thinking for itself. As a matter of fact, those things that are not our pets or close animals close to humans and above are really not thinking much at all. In other words, rocks and minerals, plants, and most animals are not thinking for themselves. And then you say, well, okay, but aren't they, some of those things, at least, if not all of them, depending upon your perspective, aren't they alive by things you've said in the past, etc.? And yes, some of them, if not all of them, have something to do with life. Even minerals are like pre-life. They're not alive by traditional standards, but they have something to do with it. And they have something thinking for them instead of thinking most of the time for themselves. And that thing that is thinking for them is generally referred to as a certain kind of soul. It's called a group soul because it thinks in ways that affects large numbers of potential life forms. But it doesn't think very much for the individual. So if there is some type of individuality in thought, such as some animals sometimes express, not very often, but they do, those animals then are actually thinking as a cross, where they're affected mostly maybe by their group soul's thought, but at the same time, they occasionally may think for themselves, which is a good thing, because then they're getting closer to being a part of their creator on a conscious level. See? But they're not quite there necessarily, because in order to do that, you've got to be completely, completely the we'll say, progenitor. That's like the person who begins the process of the thinking. So you can't have a group soul, because a group soul does that progenitor thinking for animals and plants, etc. But if we're going to do it as humans, which really puts us a lot closer to being conscious of our own creator, then it has to come with us directing the show and not having a group soul. And we don't. We have individual souls. And the individual soul doesn't do the thinking for us. Isn't that interesting? It does not do the thinking for us like the souls of animals and plants do. So we, as humans, are kind of unique. And what is it that, why is that the case? Well, that has to do with the structure of mental thought. You see how I'm creeping it into here? This very complicated, convoluted subject. I'm gradually leading you by the nose into understanding it. I think we might have somebody on the line. I don't know who it might be. So let's find out. Who is it that might be on the line at this time? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, who is this?
This is Justin.
Oh, hi. Is it Dustin or Justin?
Hey, it's Justin.
Hi, Justin. How are you doing?
Hey.
What can I do for you, Justin?
Yeah. Well, I'm just, calling from Florida, and I just really wanted to know what is the point of your getting around.
What is the point of what I'm getting around? Is that what you asked?
Yes, uh-huh.
Well, let me ask you this, because I'm not sure what your question means, but what point would you like to get to, or what point do you think you're trying to understand?
Everything. Like, what you're saying, it sounds straight, but, like, I just don't understand.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I guess we're right at the first couple of minutes of the show. I'll tell you what. You certainly are, I want you to understand, of course. I would love for you to understand. But at this stage, why don't we make an agreement? Call me back in a little bit if you still don't understand, because give me a chance to kind of develop the concepts and let's see if you get it done. If you don't, then definitely give me a call back, and I'd like to talk to you more about it. How's that sound?
Fuck it.
Hello? Oh, well, he's gone. I don't know what happened to him. Anyway, maybe I got him upset. I don't know. I was just trying to explain to him that in order to understand this, we've got to understand something more about the difference between mental thinking and thought in general, and how structural thought is really composed, and how it connects to the beginning of enlightenment, the beginning of understanding our own creator. Because the difference between us and those animals and plants and even minerals that don't really count maybe to some people as being part of life is that those things that we are so familiar with, unfortunately, do not have an understanding of their creator. And the reason for it is they can't think for themselves at a complete enough level. This is where the structure comes in. So they can put together their relationship to the relationship of other life that eventually leads them to understanding their relationship to God. So we do, and this is a gift from God, basically, you could call it that, that our minds are really structured in a way that allows us to do this. This is the wonderful thing about it, and it literally comes from a spark of light, we'll say. For those of you who like the idea of light, light is like the expression of God's thought. And we actually are given this. We are given this spark of light in our mental mind. It's part of the structure of it. so that all humans have the capability. It doesn't mean we choose to use it, but we, if we do, to be able to have a connection to our Creator, or to choose not to. But we have the choice. Whereas you can't really say that a fish, or, yeah, I don't want to pick on just fish, but, yeah, it could be fish, or maybe, you know, a spider, or a fly, or maybe a plant, or grass, or whatever it might be, or trees. I have that kind of connection, because they are missing what I'm going to define in another minute or two as the total structure. And that's really important. The total structure is the key to getting this answer. So hopefully, within the next 20 or 30 minutes, we'll be able to get there. And by the way, speaking of time, we will be going to a quarter after the hour, which is great, because that gives us much more time in this show, and I can take on a subject of this complexity, whereas in the normal spectrum of our show time, it would be very difficult to do. And hopefully it'll make it much more understandable. And if, again, any of you don't understand, please, you know, give me a call as we're going through this and say, well, I don't understand that or I don't understand this. Just saying you don't understand right now wouldn't help, because I haven't had a chance to explain what the show's really about. Okay, so structure. How is it that structure is so critical, and what is it that makes us human, in fact, and gives us this great gift of light? Where is the light? Why do we get it and animals don't get it and plants don't get it, but we get it, and, you know, we're in a different kingdom and we're more advanced, but it has, there has to be something that's more definable than just that, and that's what I'm going to get to right now. Okay, so human beings have a very special, we'll say, kind of structure. And the structure is built up from the fact that we are far more complex in the kinds of thinking that we can do. We can think mostly in the past if we want to. And when I say past, I'm talking about time now. And if we choose to, that means we can have some memory of something that took place yesterday or a year ago or whatever. And strangely, I'm going to tell you this, although it's hard to believe, so can plants to a very small extent. And so can animals to a larger extent. But we can do it with even better perspective, because we can not only know that something happened in the past, but approximately when it happened in the past. And that's a very important issue. Just hold on to that. Hold on. Okay. And that comes mostly from our physical brain, and which is very complicated. It stores a lot of information. And the etheric part of that brain is connected to a nadir system. It's like the etheric part, the electromagnetic part of our nervous system, that allows us to compare a whole bunch of information almost together at the same time. But we don't do the comparing in the physical brain. We do it in our mental mind. That's going to confuse you a little bit. Like, we can take the information from the physical brain, but we have to compare it in the mental mind in order to know the relationship, it's called logic, between when one thing happened and another thing happened, to be able to determine the value of something in time as it took place in the past. Okay, I hope I'm not confusing you on this, but this is not an easy subject. So let's try to stay with this, because remember, we got enough time in the show, hopefully, to make some sense out of this. So for a lot of you, you've heard me talk about this, but only in generalities. Today, I'm going to go into the specifics, so it kind of makes some sense. A lot of people have read books that I've written and textbook, Lights and Meaning, et cetera, or articles and other things. And they said, oh, yeah, you always talk about time and whatever, but you never really explain the nitty-gritty. Well, hey, this is your show then, because that's what I'm doing. I'm getting down to the more nitty-gritty that explains it a lot better and maybe makes a lot more sense in the whole totality of the situation. Okay, so let's go on. All right, So we've got this great gift because we not only have this ability to look at the past, but we also have a fully developed past and present part of our mind that I'll call the astral mind. And the type of thinking that the astral mind does is creative imagination. It's able to actually make pictures of things as we would like them to be in the present, based upon, to some extent, a change from the past. Wow. That's pretty neat, right? We can do that. So can some animals. They can do that, too. And this gives us the ability, then, to be creative in the present, not just to be aware of the difference between past events. That gives us a much greater perspective and allows us to do a lot more things. Some animals can do this as well. So that's a very neat way of being able to think. It's called creative imagination, and people have it. That's a good thing. But now we get to the monastic or mental part of us, which is pretty cool. You know, the mental part is the part that actually, you know, is like just way out there. It allows us to do something far more than animals can do in general, and way beyond the plants, period. And forget about minerals and all that stuff. We're just way beyond that. Because what we can do is we can fully grasp the reasons for something to change, exist, be created, be destroyed in the future. That gives us what is known as a whole concept to work with. We understand why far more than any animal. Even our pets, which somewhat learn a little bit of this from us, can't really do it very well. But we can. And the reason we can is we can incorporate the full structure of time into mental thinking. Because mental thinking is the use of all parts, past, present, and future, of time. And this gives us a totally different perspective in our thinking. Because once we can understand the whys of things, we can discover our own creator. Without understanding the whys of things in general, and especially the more complicated ones, our creator is invisible. So basically, to most animals, and certainly to plants, the creator is an invisible thing to them. They don't know what that would mean. Now, you could say, well, what about the group souls? Where do they exist that have, that do some thinking for animals, plants, minerals? Well, those group souls do exist in the mental world. And they do have some understanding of their creator because they have the ability to work in cooperation with that creator to help the growing, at least, of the life they're familiar with. What they can't do, that humans can do, is they can only understand their creator for the most part. I shouldn't say only, but for the most part, can understand their creator in relationship to the life that they inform. So they have a great deal of trouble, but they can do a little bit of it. Understanding life outside of the life that's closest to them. And they can only understand it in a general way if it's distant from them. So that doesn't allow them to really help create life that's very different from the life that they're familiar with. But humans, on the opposite side, can co-create with their creator in helping them to develop life of any sort, including pre-life, and be concerned about the climate or this or that, and that may affect a whole planet, and whether that planet can survive or not. And we have incredible abilities because we are thinking in concert with our creator about all parts of life. Whereas these group souls, they aren't able to do that. But they can, in terms of the life that they inform, think in all three parts of time. But then they can only give that thought to their informing life in a very, very prescribed way, preconceived. So the conceptual part of why is not really answered for the life they're informing only to themselves. The life they're informing is clueless. Why? Why does the bird build a nest a certain way? Why does the mating of the bird have a certain dance involved? Because the group soul figured out why, but the life form itself doesn't understand it yet. We understand it because we can understand all life, so we can look at many birds. We could look at many forms of life and understand why many things are taking place in that life. But the life itself, for the group souls, clueless for the most part. Okay, so some of this, I hope, is making some sense. I'm trying to build a framework so this idea of structure isn't so complicated and difficult to understand. I'm using more examples that may be helpful. But again, that takes more time, and luckily we have it in today's show. I was kind of betting on that tonight. Okay, so let me go on. Now, I hope I haven't lost you yet. You know, I'm going to keep building on this thing. Right? So let's build on it a bit more, okay? Let's go a little bit further. The next part of this process, then, is since humans have this this amazing ability, how come? I mean, I'm telling you we do, but I haven't explained how that works and why that works, etc. And now we're going to get into the more nitty-gritty parts, but they're kind of interesting, because it really is going to inform us about what it means to be human and why we are so different. Everybody I hear that is an evolutionist tends to classify human beings pretty much as being a mammal. We're just a more advanced mammal. We're so far from being a more advanced mammal, it's kind of asinine to even consider it. But unfortunately, when you are convinced of a theory, as many people are, that evolution is applied to all elements of life, and you don't understand spirit or don't want to understand or apply spirit to a situation, then the problem becomes that you can be blind to the obvious. The obvious is that human beings are very different from other quote-unquote mammals. We're not really, we shouldn't be classified as mammals because we're another kingdom. But for evolutionists who are quite in that, that's what they want to believe. Now, does that mean that evolution doesn't apply? No, it applies. Of course, it works great when you're dealing with things other than human beings. It's wonderful. It explains so much. But it doesn't apply because of everything that I'm going to be explaining in the rest of this show. So for those of you who really want to understand more about the differences between evolution and evolution when it's applied or used with spiritual development, this is a good show to get your teeth into, so to speak. Okay, so now let's go on and talk about or go through the elements of what it is that's going on inside our mental mind. And what is really mental thought, which I'll further explain, and how it all comes together. Okay, so we already know that there's three parts of time that are missing, in their totality anyway, in the individual life forms below humans. They exist to some extent for group souls, but only for the group souls informing that they inform of life forms, not for all of life. So they're very limited. They've got their limitations. We have an individual soul. Our soul does not think for us, but we can think for our soul. Okay, our soul cannot think for us, but we can think for our soul while we exist in the world lower than where our soul exists in. Our soul exists in a place called the higher monastic or mental world. We exist in thought in that world to some extent, and also in the lower part of that world. So we exist in the mental world, we exist in the astral world, we exist and presently live in physical form, in the physical world, which also is composed of electromagnetic parts, which some people call the etheric. While we exist separated from our soul in time and space, while we exist in, to some extent separated from our soul, we can think and be our soul if we choose to, or we can think in ways that are opposite from our soul or somewhat tangential or somewhat different and separate ourselves from our soul. Our soul cannot choose to think and be us. Why not? Why doesn't it go in that direction? Because, this is going to sound weird, when you have an individual soul, the individual soul actually doesn't think for just the person, but the individual soul thinks for all of life because that's what it's truly aware of and understands, unlike the group soul. It's kind of the reverse of what you would think it is, and the group soul is thinking only for its informing life form. So it's kind of like the words almost are the opposite of what the real meaning is, in some sense. It's an odd thing. Now that's a little complicated to understand. If I lost you, I'll say it in a different way. So the group souls basically are really focused in on their informing part of life, the part that they keep going and think for. Whereas the individual soul of a human being is thinking for all of life, and is less concerned about the individual aspect of its life, its connected life, which is the human being that is its incarnate. Wow. How different is that? And the interesting part about this is it gives us freedom. So we're not being controlled in our thought by our soul. However, our soul can be affected by us in two ways. We could choose to not think as our soul thinks and think of only ourselves. Then we're kind of making ourselves more like an animal, if you think about that. Or we can choose to think mostly like our soul or somewhat like our soul, and then we are actually connecting ourselves with our soul by our own thought. Not because our soul is thinking for us, but because we are thinking more like our soul wherever we exist. After we die from the physical world and go on to the astral world to live out in an astral consciousness, an astral body, then we're still thinking, if we choose to, like our soul, and we still could connect it just as much or more so there in that realm than we can even here. And so it's an amazing process, amazing, that this is the way that we connect. We are actually choosing to either connect with our soul, it's like plugging in, or unplugging. We can do either way we want. Of course, plugging in is a great, much better way, because then we are not living the limited life of just our personal self, but we're starting to live the life of all life and connecting ourselves to being the experience of our creator. We can become much more creative when we think for all of life because we're not just involving ourselves with creating for just ourselves. So we have a much wider spectrum that we can involve our thought with. And the more we think in a wider spectrum, the more meaning we derive from life, and the more we are connecting ourselves to our creator or God. Wow. That's a pretty neat idea, huh? Okay, and this is all happening because we can think in all three parts of the structure of mental thought. And we're so different from anything else that's less than we are from doing that. That's a pretty cool idea, I think. Okay, so let's go a little bit deeper. I know this is like, oh man, it's going to get deeper. Yeah, well, but a little bit, but that, not too much so I swamp you with this stuff because it's not easy to understand. I know, it's just like, you know, like, okay, you got that so far. So what is then the specific elements that makes the mental body and mind so different that allows all this to take place? Well, it has to do with the hookup between spirit and energy. Spirit has to express itself through energy. In other words, spirit has to have a body. spirit alone without a body cannot interact with other spirit that has a body or with other life. And it's the interaction in this universe. You know, the God that created our universe wants us to interact. It's part of God's own mind. It's the way God decided that the whole universe is going to work. So in order for us to have interaction, which is the only way we could ever discover God through having evolved with other life, if we couldn't interact with other life, we couldn't discover God, and we couldn't be anything other than like some kind of, you know, solipsist type of being who only thought that we are the only thing that exists. Some people do believe that, by the way. But most of us don't. And so in order to have interaction, it is critical that we have spirit associated with and thinking for the body or energy that it uses to interact with other life. Okay? You're following that. Now, this type of issue that the body and mind have to come together, and they have to eventually to be at the level of human being, doing so through a co-creative process that is unfolding to both of them, both the energy, because the energy has some level of thought too. I didn't mention that, but its level of thought is way below the spirits in most circumstances. But it's got to be able to reveal God in the process to a human being for that human being to find life meaningful. Otherwise, life becomes only as meaningful as the type of thought that it's doing less than human. So if you want to think like, you want to think like a bird, well, then your life won't be any more meaningful than a bird. If you want to think like a cockroach, your life won't be any more meaningful than a cockroach. If you want to think like a tree, your life won't be any more meaningful than a tree. So whatever you choose to think like is ultimately what you create yourself into, and the meaning of your own existence is limited then by how you choose to think. The less you think of other life besides your own, the more you're going to be restricted in how meaningful it is and how much contact you have with your creator. Okay. Hope that's making some sense to you. So we've got to be able to work with the energies that compose our mental body, giving those energies the ability to connect with other life and have the experience of interaction while the spirit part of us is growing in consciousness and in its ability to co-create with God more life outside of just ourselves. Very interesting. Now, in the beginning of our existence, in each lifetime, we spend a lot of time, this the formative years, really developing mostly ourselves. Most people do this. But that's just the beginning. And it's supposed to, from that point, move out. Some people don't get to that point, and then they become relatively self-focused and not have a great life. How much of our mental body, then, is driven by the element of form or energy. And the interesting part about this is that it's divided up in the following way. The lower part of our mental body is dominated by the energy. So when we tend to think of less conceptual things, the way animals tend to think, we become less human, and we tend to be more concrete in our thinking. We don't understand the whys of things, which tends to reduce our levels of consciousness. When we tend to think in the higher mental energies, those higher mental energies, for those of you who would like to know, are sometimes referred to as devonic energies. These are energies that have some light in them, okay? But they are of a higher devonic type of energy than is found anywhere below the higher mental world. and they're sometimes referred to as solar, giving out light, whereas the demonic energies below that status that are in the lower mental body and even lower, those don't give out the light. See, the light is a real important thing because that's part of God. We'll get to that part, though. I'm not going to really explain where that comes from a little later. But okay, so amazingly, we have the option. We can think using the Y parts. And when we think using the Y parts of us, and we derive concepts, in other words, we understand why something is taking place, we are able to apply it to bigger and bigger parts of life, wow, and be more creative, and be more inclusive, and get closer to our Creator. And we'll use all three parts of time. We start thinking about how the past and present is going to affect the future, not of just our life, because that is selfish, but of all life. And we start seeing all the connections. The connections is what builds our consciousness. Tell me that isn't cool. I think that's really neat. I really do. Okay, so this is the element, we'll say, that we have to be most concerned about, is that we build our consciousness while we are exercising our freedom to co-create, and not just ourselves, but other life. And when we do create other life, we are creating more of ourselves. We're making ourselves more into a godlike being. But we also are co-creating with all of life around us, and we are concerned with that. This is a fascinating thing to me, but I realize for some of you this might be really getting out there. Okay, so if we're going to now talk about the structure, then we have to talk about these different kinds of energies and whether we have the ability to get them to really do what we want them to do, which is to follow our thought and interact with other life in ways it's co-creative and helps that life do the same. It gives that other life freedom to be creative itself at whatever level it is. If it's controlled by a group soul, then we work with the group soul's thought and not against it. If it's another human being or beyond, then we work with that human being to help it to become more soul-like, individually soul-like, in its thought, and therefore closer to God. See how that works? And that's the thing we're aiming for. That's what we're trying to do. But there are certain key elements in this. We've got to make sure that we are including a balance and a logic. Logic means past, present, and future makes sense. And a balance in that one of those parts, the past, the present, and the future, is not dominating our thought, which would show some level of non-inclusiveness and would make us being exclusive and in many ways selfish. Even if you think only of the future, a lot of people say, well, if you think of the future, isn't a good thing. Not if you're not balanced with the past and the present. Then you may have some really difficult issues if you choose to think that way. Some people do. And that's sometimes it can lead to all kinds of intellectual arrogances and other problems. At any rate, I'm going to break for right now, give your brain a rest, give your minds a rest, your brains and minds a rest here for a couple of minutes. Or you can take them with us while we're going to break. I hear it's about a little over 2.5 minutes or so. And when we come back, I will continue. I'll try to make this a bit more practical because you know I tend to do that. And I'll just continue on. So we'll be back in, give or take, 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. We were just talking last week. There may have been about a minute to a minute and a half gap where something went kaplooey. So I heard this from several listeners. And this happens. I mean, we are dealing with a complicated thing because I'm in one location, literally maybe many hundreds of miles away from where the engineer and all the people are doing their stuff. So anything can happen, you know. It's live, you know, live radio. You never know what it's going to be. And so we may have lost about a minute or a minute and a half of the show. If you experienced that, it wasn't your computer. It was something that was happening, going on in the intricacies of this whole system. But it came back, and then apparently everybody heard the rest. So, but you may have a little gap in what I was trying to explain, unfortunately. And, you know, there's not much I can do about that. I wish I could just, you know, instantly fix it, but I don't know how to do that. Okay, so let's continue on. So we were talking about the structure. And structure is contingent upon two really big things, the relationship of spirit to mental spirit to mental energies, and the relationship of time. And time is a dimensional part of space in the mental world. It's actually a completed dimension there. Here it is not. In the physical world, time is not complete at all. But in the mental world, it's just like you can, as a dimension, you can sit in a chair within a room and there's three dimensions. Time is another whole dimension, but it only exists in a whole state in the mental world and beyond. So there's a whole dimension to thought that is critical but missing unless you think mentally, and mentally means both in the lower mental and the higher mental world. So only human beings are aware of the completed dimension of time. And this gives us a whole different perspective than, say, animals in general have. Now our pets get a little glimpse of this from us, but I'm not counting them because they're in a special category. But the rest of the animals and plants, et cetera, they don't have a perspective of the whole dimension of time. So it's like as if we were living in two dimensions. They're living in three, but mine is the full dimension of time. And we actually have an awareness of the full dimension of time. Because we have senses. We have a body, a monastic or mental body, that has a full sense of that dimension, which includes time. Isn't that neat? Without our mental senses, and some people have those damage due to drug abuse or sometimes illnesses and age, etc. If you lose that, then you lose the perspective, you lose the sense of time. And eventually you lose the ability to know the relationship of time from one event to another. We sometimes refer to that as dementia. You may also lose the ability to be creative in time, so that you can't be very logical in the way that you express something, and you can't create new thoughts. You lose the ability to think new thoughts. Those are all very bad outcomes, and they happen to us mostly because of selfishness, either in the present lifetime and in some circumstances because of karma from a past lifetime, if you get an illness that causes it, as an example. So it's really interesting. There's so many ways to explain so many different effects to human beings. I'll try to cover a lot of them in the second section, but I won't be able to cover all of them because it's a huge subject. It's very complicated because all that we are, that really makes us human in comparison to other life, comes from our ability to sense in the mental world and to sense accurately, and then to use these senses to create with our thought there and to get our bodies to become interactive so that they can have an experience that is with other life. And this is so critical in what it means to be human. Does this make sense? I hope this is coming together for you out there. Because it's very exciting to me. It explains so much of the human experience. And without this understanding, even though you may have read or listened to many things I've taught, there's an incompleteness. Because this is the real meat of what it means to be human in comparison to other lower forms of life. I'm going to also, if I assume I will have time, talk about superhuman, beyond human. So don't think we won't get into that, because we will. I think we're going to have enough time. So I can cover a bit of that, because that's kind of a neat subject too, because once you understand what it means to be human, it's a lot easier to understand what it means to be superhuman. If you don't understand what it means to be human, understanding what it means to be superhuman is a complete waste of time. You're never going to get there. Okay, so let's go on. Let's continue. Okay. The mental body is fairly complicated. It's intricate. It's not as simple as the lower bodies. And so its means of interaction is far more subtle and far more intricate than anything that could happen to us using our creative imagination or our ways of cooperating and sharing in interactions with other life forms physically. It's way more complicated than that. So you can say that the way we interact with other life in terms of our thoughts, concepts, and ideas is extremely complicated than the ways that we do so using our physical actions every day. And that's what I'm talking about in terms of mental interaction, you see. Mental interaction is the bonding of human beings when it is done in a way that co-creates with God, that leads to those human beings becoming much closer to God and much more collectively interactive to God. It's a really wonderful thing, and it's what we call, in our ways of, we'll say, living, our society. How society builds itself and how civilization is intertwined with it in terms of interaction and use of sense. We actually are the way we are because we think the way we think, and not vice versa, by the way, which unfortunately evolution tends to reverse that very idea, and it makes everything very confusing. You'll find once you adopt, if you choose to, what I'm suggesting in today's show, it'll make a lot more sense to you, almost everything that's going on around you. And a lot of questions will clear up about why society is this way and not that way. How is it that human beings have all this that we have created if we're just mammals with a bigger brain? It doesn't seem to make sense. Now, evolutionists say, oh, it's because we have speech. Well, lots of things could have speech. But it's the ideas that the speech represents and the concepts that really is what we're talking about. And that's what the evolutionists can't explain at all, because science doesn't understand thought. All right, so let's move into that. Let's talk about what that means then. If we're talking about all of these intricate ways that human beings can interact on a mental level, this is the cornerstone of what I would call soul connections with people. A lot of people say, gee, how do you have a soul connection with somebody? Well, I'm not talking about like soul mate necessarily, because that's a more romantic connotation. I talk about in general, though. If you're having a soul connection with somebody, you are interacting at a minimum on a completed mental level with them, where higher concepts, higher concepts that are very spiritual, not just incomplete concepts that usually are not spiritual, but higher concepts that are very spiritual, are melding together because you're interacting, meaning you're helping the other person to build their concepts, but they're doing the same with you. And those concepts then become parts of creative imagination and interaction in physical existence if you happen to be physically alive. And you can see that this now becomes the real glue that makes all kinds of human relations possible and invention. Human invention using all the lower kingdoms, such as life, to grow it and to make it more productive and more, safe for that life to grow itself and for it to be good and virtuous and be part of God rather than in some way destructive, poisonous, terrible stuff. We can do that. We can build terrible things and make them destructive. But then we're not doing this process of this really fantastic interaction that we have the capability of doing. Because the negative things are done with incomplete concepts. An incomplete concept is, let's build a bigger bomb so we can kill more people, so we can force people to think the way we think. That's a very bad incomplete concept. It's so incomplete you would swear it may not be a concept, but it actually has. There is a why. I mean, you could say there is a concept there. But it isn't a spiritual concept, not even close. It's a fanatical concept that deals with the lowest part of the higher mind that is, unfortunately, extremely incomplete and not connected to God unless a higher part of the same higher mind, representing a true spiritual concept, is connected in. And then we're not building bombs anymore for destroying. We're building ways of helping life to grow and finding ways to help people who want to build bombs to stop doing that in ways that hopefully isn't necessary to destroy them. So ultimately, we have all of these amazing gifts, these amazing ways to function because of the structure and complexity of the mental thought. It is so complex that in comparison to our creative imagination, it's maybe trillions of times more creative, at least billions, but I think it could be a trillion or more times more creative than anything we can imagine. You might say, well, then what is the real difference? Well, when we imagine something, it's not something that can be changed. It's just, at the moment, it is what it is. It's whatever we imagine it to be. But it's not actually a living, changing, creative instrument. It's just a thing, whatever it is. Whereas when we create something that is spiritually conceptual, it's sort of like an imagined thing, but it applies to everything, and it's a moving picture of how everything can interact in a better way. That's so different than just imagining a thing. Now we're imagining a concept of God and how it can be applied to, in a universal way, to vast amounts, if not all parts of life. And the more it does connect to more and more parts of life, the more we call true or truth. Any concept that applies to all parts of life at the present time in our existence is completely true for that time. Those are great, great concepts. And some concepts were made a long time ago that still apply today. So they have great truths to them. Now, I can't guarantee they will always be true, but they certainly have been true for a long time. This is how we live. We live our life in a, we'll say, a vast sea of interaction of thought on a mental scale with other human beings, and sometimes with superhuman beings, but most of the time with other human beings. And this interaction permits us to gain a new kind of meaning in life. The meaning that group souls get is the growth of the individual informing life that they have. The meaning that we get through this growing interaction of this complexity of structure in mental thought allows us to experience the immortal part of ourselves, our soul, and how that soul is becoming closer and closer to its creator, and to recognize more and more of the creator in everything else. It gives us a picture of the universe that is so incredibly different. It makes us into something unique. It's that picture, it's a moving picture, of the universe that makes us special. And gives our life tremendous meaning because there is no end to the amount of co-creation in the godly part of thought. No end. Whereas in the selfish part of thought, there's always an end. And the scary part of that is that that means it gives us a perspective that existence at some point ends, making us very fearful of a false, an untrue, concept that ultimately we're going to die in some way and our consciousness will cease to exist. So you can see how important it is to think in spiritual concepts because it overcomes the fear of death. It gets rid of some of the worst fears and torturous issues that human beings can put themselves through. And it may lead to and gives us a great lifetime of meaning, far beyond anything that any other lower creature could ever manage to have, including a group soul. And it also gives us something else that's special, and that is our soul, which we're helping to grow and unfold, literally unfold, is in a unique circumstance. It has the ability to think in these thoughts that I'm describing, but it doesn't have enough connection with the lower realms below the higher mental world part that it exists in to be able to unfold most of itself without incarnation. The souls don't just incarnate because they're wonderful beings, which they are, by the way. They do so because it's their only way to have interaction. Their ability to interact with each other comes from the experiences that their incarnates provide to them about the worlds of time and space that exist below the realm they exist in. And literally, they unfold and develop themselves, develop their own body, which is sometimes called a lotus in spiritual terms. And inside this body, they have great light. And they can enlighten the body with the light within themselves from their thought, but their thought can't be developed until they develop incarnates who co-create with God to some extent, creating virtuous lives. if some of their incarnates grew up and don't create virtue, well, that lifetime doesn't develop them. It just doesn't. And it's kind of a waste, you might say. Also, there are karmic issues, so that lifetime will have to be resolved in a future time. But many of their lifetimes have considerable amounts of virtue that are created, and so they do unfold. And there is this light that is inside them, given to them by their creating being, sometimes referred to as a monad, with a secondary being somewhat helpful, that co-creates the similar light in each incarnate's personality. Wow. So we've got like an alter ego, sometimes referred to as an angel or solar angel, that helps to develop light within the incarnate. And then we've got this thing called a monad, which is another even greater soul of sorts, a great being, that doesn't even incarnate at all, doesn't have any direct experience in incarnation, that helps to develop the soul. And the human soul has all this help from beings that are greater than human beings. Because the human soul couldn't exist in the realm that it has to exist in if it didn't have some help. There's also help that comes from the next kingdom or kingdoms beyond human. And the solar angel, by the way, is actually a member of these next kingdoms. But it isn't the only member. Some of the members of the next kingdom are human beings who have advanced themselves, so they have become a liberated soul who no longer has to incarnate in order to experience the lower three worlds, the mental, the astral, and the physical. They no longer have to because they perfected those bodies and they can directly experience all those worlds at the same time while they exist in a place called the intuitional or Buddhic dimension, which is actually a dimension that is beyond the dimension that human beings, for the most part, can sense in. So we can't even barely sense anything in that dimension. You just have to believe me, I guess, that it may exist or that it does exist. But these beings can actually exist there, and they used to be humans. They so perfected their ability to connect with their soul that they finally made themselves into their soul while they can physically and astrally and mentally exist all at the same time. They can exist in all of those worlds because they've joined all their senses and bodies into one great body and sense. Whoa, that is perfect. That is perfected. It doesn't get misinformation and screwball ideas. It gets truth. And it doesn't get imagination that is self-focused. It gets imagination that is completely super empathic. And they can feel what all these imaginations that they have in their astral body, how they affect all things. Wow. And then they can sense all the potential interactions in the physical world and know what ways to best cooperate and share in any one moment. Wow. So they have all these great gifts because they have become a liberated soul. It's called liberated because the soul is no longer confined by its own body and it's free to express itself with all other liberated souls and think together as one when needed. Wow. I mean, that's like amazing. That's totally amazing. And these beings can actually help us, or at least our soul, to develop more after the soul is created. So they don't create the soul necessarily, but they help to in its development, and they help to improve. And they also help us when we incarnate under certain circumstances. Rarely, but they do. So they have that as an option. It's a pretty neat system, if you ask me. I really like it. I think it's wonderful. Of course, then again, I guess my viewpoint may not be the same as everybody else's. Okay, so here we have this really complicated, connective, all the things are put together, and yet it all works. And it works because it's needed to work in order for God to grow. You could say that the whole system was developed by God, but only the framework. The actual development beyond just the framework is us. God doesn't get in and make our choices for us. That's why bad things can happen to good people, because ultimately, even though we may generally be good, we may screw up, and we may do a number of things that can be pretty tough on us. And God is given us freedom to think and to choose and to do whatever we want to do. And ultimately, that means pretty much hands-off on human interactions, on any dimension of time and space, but especially the monastic. So when we think and we interact with others, we're free to think. We're free to create, or to create bad, and to be arrogant if we choose to, or egotistical, which leads to a lot of the bad things that happen to us in the long run. In the short run, no. But in the long run, if you have a lot of untrue thought, and you do a lot of, unfortunately, negative thinking that's destructive to other people, the results can be, over time, some seriously difficult karmic problems that may fool you. You may have to understand where they're coming from, because you don't understand the nature that you are the true creator of your existence. A lot of people say, well, why is this happening to me? I didn't do anything wrong. No, you did do something wrong, but you didn't understand that you're doing anything wrong. That's okay. I mean, it's a eventual process of taking responsibility for all that you are and realizing that you are the creator of yourself, both in a small sense and a big sense. So this is the wonderful way it works. I find it just amazing. Let's talk about the light that the solar angel creates in the personality. The soul can help to create life, but usually it needs a little assistance or more from the solar angel, because the soul is really in a learning stage. It's not liberated, the human soul. And it's existing in a very narrow part of the higher mental world. It doesn't understand all the truths, and it doesn't understand a lot of things, so because it hasn't had enough incarnations to liberate itself, so obviously it's going to make some mistakes. And the solar angel tries to come in, and it picks and chooses the parts of the personality that is going to be in each incarnate as an expression of a theme that the soul wants to work with many other souls on. And it has to be something that is an agreement that the soul has, a human soul has made with other human souls. But the intricacy of it is so complicated that the solar angel usually assists in determining what spiritual genes are used and the way that the light is that it creates in the personality. Without that light, the human being couldn't become another new life form. This light is actually takes place in the kind of, we'll call it, the more enlightened part of the energy that mostly is composing the personality. Personality has some spirit. It has a self, which is kind of controlled, and that self is all spirit. But the personality is mostly energy, more than it is spirit. And to make sure that this energy is going to have a good chance to be do some virtuous things, because after all, that's the whole idea of these incarnations, the solar angel picks the best possible combination within the theme that the soul itself, the individual human soul, chose with a whole bunch, hundreds of other human souls in various scenarios that it decided upon what it wanted to create within its limitations of karma. And so it's a complicated arrangement. It's a very complicated arrangement. I hope I haven't lost you on this part. But what I'm trying to explain here is there's this great cooperation going on. And a human being is really the best that could be done at that time that still applies to the best in co-creating life beyond just that human being. If you only included the nature of that one human being, you would almost find no lifetime that was the best for that one human being, which explains why some bad things are going to happen to that human being in relationship to only its own existence. But if you understand the wider principle, then you could suddenly say, well, now it starts to make sense why some bad things could happen to this person, even though it seemingly is doing some good things, because it isn't about that one person. It's about all of life, and especially all of life that that person chooses to interact with, and especially chooses to interact with in the areas where its consciousness is focused, when it's physically alive, when it's astrally alive, and when it's alive lower mentally. That's when the key issues become most operative. So that's the real big difference. It's where our consciousness is focused that our actions make the most difference and our thoughts make the most difference. So if we choose to ignore that and say, well, I'll be good when I get to the mental world, but right now I'm going to screw off in the physical and astral, well, guess what? That's going to lead to some pretty bad stuff. Maybe not right away, but it's certainly not going to be a good thing. So that's not a good attitude. Now, I know some people that have developed that, but that's really not a good attitude. I wouldn't recommend that you do that, by the way. All right. So ultimately, this process is to help us to continue to grow. And in growing, we're going to move eventually into becoming one of these super beings that lives, as I explained earlier. That's a wonderful thing. And the kind of mind we're going to have then, instead of thinking only in whole time, we're going to think in something that goes beyond just the question of whole time. It goes into the ability to sense with oneness with all other beings at that level of consciousness. So you start being able to sense what others are sensing. And you start being able to think using the perceptions of others. Wow, that's pretty cool. So just think about it. Most of the time when we're thinking with our perceptions, right? Oh, we can communicate with other people about what might be their perceptions, but we can't instantly get 100 or 200 or 1,000 other people's perceptions at one time and be able to use the information from those perceptions to help us to think. But if you become a super being, superhuman, or some people call it a master, you can do that. And that's pretty neat. Think about what that might mean. Think about what that means in terms of those beings and what kind of life they live. And remember, their lower senses in the three lower worlds are joined together, so they just sense the whole lower three worlds as one thing, one place they live in all at the same time. It's beyond our comprehension, I understand. But it is something to think about. Anyway, I'm running out of time, but I hope today's show has led you to a better understanding of this most complicated and difficult subject. If you haven't had a chance, pick up some Soul Balance. It really works. It helps to balance the centers in our bodies. So not only can we be well, but we also will be able to do some of the things that I talked about in today's show a little bit easier and better. And you can call for information about that to Life Balance Association, 602-472-5127. Give them a call. And then also I want to mention, if you haven't had a chance to try Ideal Self-Sorption Resveratrol, give it a shot, especially for your animals. Works for that. Even if you don't want to get it for yourself, get some for your dogs and cats. ForeverYoungProducts.com, 800-777-7850. You can get some for yourself and your animals. I think you'll find that the stuff really works. It both keeps you younger, but it keeps you as young as you are already, but it will actually reverse some aging. That's the first thing that I've noticed that it works in. It also can treat some kinds of illnesses, and you can look those up for yourself to see what the literature presently is saying about that. I don't want to make a lot of statements about that because that's getting into an area that may not be something I want to say over the air. So we'll leave that open for right now, but it's something to consider. Hopefully this has all made sense. I hope that this show has brought together some varied ideas that I've mentioned in many different shows, kind of glued it all together so it makes some sense to you. And next time we talk about this general subject area, I'll go even deeper into some other elements that we couldn't cover today because they're just too intricate and too far out there. Okay, so we're out of time for right now. Until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.